This is a WATD Political Forum on 95.9 WATD. Online at 95.9WATD.com. Now, live from Studio B, here's your moderator, WATD's Christine James.
And good evening and welcome to a WATD Political Forum. It is the candidates for the 9th Congressional District. I am your moderator, Christine James, and I'm joined by Monday Night Talk host Kevin Tuch. Good evening.
Hello.
And reporter Charles Mathewson asking questions. We've got the candidates for the 9th Congressional District, the incumbent Democrat, Bill Keating. Good evening, Bill. We've got
Good evening.
And we've got the Republican, Helen Brady. So nice to see you here. And an independent candidate, Coach Mike Manley. Thank you so much.
Good evening, Christine. Glad to be here.
Oh, and we have the folks here from Marshfield Community Television. We've got Amy Leonard doing the timing right over there with the green, the red, and the yellow. Same system we always use. Green means go, yellow means 10 seconds, and red means stop. Now, if you are still talking with the red card up, you get the slow 5-second countdown. Then you get the bell, and if you're still talking, then we cut the mics. And we've got Larry Nelson, our engineer, over there, and he will do that if we need to. So far, we've had to do that just very few times, so that's good. Now, the district, if you're not sure where the 9th Congressional District is, it's all of the Cape and the Islands, a good portion of the South Shore from Norwell down to the Cape, and portions of the South Coast that include parts of Fall River and New Bedford. Our format is simple. We use the same format every time. Opening statements, no longer than 2 minutes. Closing statements, no longer than 1 minute. We ask the candidates to have them prepared. Now, in between, we ask a round of questions. We ask that your answers be kept to 1 minute tops. And then we get to the best part of the evening, and that's the lightning round, because we find nobody for office can say either yes or no or keep their answers to two sentences. That's why we still do it. The reporter will ask you what kind of an answer they want, whether it's yes or no or one or two sentences. And when we want to remind you folks that we do have a sponsor tonight, this forum sponsored by Stuart Painting, encouraging you this fall to take pride in your vote and in your home. Visit stuartpaint.com for special home repair and painting office offers and to schedule a free estimate. Now, what we did a few minutes before we went on, we chose opening and closing order for the forum, and we will begin with Mike Manley, then we'll go to Bill Keating, then we'll go to Helen Brady, and we will reverse that order at the end. So we want to say good evening again to all the candidates, and let's start now with opening statements, and let's go to Mike Manley.
Good evening. I'm Coach Mike Manley. I live in Brewster, Mass. I'm the luckiest man on Cape Cod, but I have some important things to say today. From the Democratic website, we are fighting for a better, fairer, brighter future for every American, rolling up our sleeves, empowering grassroots voters, and organizing to take back our country. Now, let me give you my view of that. They don't care about you. Only care about Washington and Washington Democrats. The grassroots voters they're talking about, they're backed by Wall Street, big corporations, pharmaceuticals, media, and the Silicon Valley. They don't care about you. Take back our country. Let's say we want power. They want democratic society. Ronald Reagan said it best. If it moves, tax it. If it keeps moving, regulate it. If it stops moving, subsidize it. They have convinced the youth of America that $15 is a living wage. Medicare for all. You senior citizens out there, I'm one of you. We're going to be in the back of the line. I'm going to repeat that. If they get Medicare for all, we're going to be in the back of the line. If you need a hip replacement, a knee replacement, cataracts, do it now. I'm telling you, do it now. Living in a democratic society like Germany, no air conditioning, dinky heaters, 50-year mortgages, no consumer services, tiny washing machines, free education. You want free education? You're going to give 50% of your salary to the government. Gas is going to be $7 to $10, and sales taxes are going to be 20%. For all those college students out there, you were born an original. Don't come back a copy.
Thank you. That was the opening statement with Mike Manley. He's the independent in the race. Now we're going to go to the incumbent Democrat, and that's Bill Keating. Good evening.
Thank you, Christine. Christine, we're in the biggest non-military crisis in our country's history. 225,000 people are dead with the COVID-19 virus. Six of my own friends and counting, I'm afraid, people that have passed away. Plymouth and Kingston are now in the red zone and are scaling back some of their activities according to the governor's orders. And our president has recognized on tape that this is something that's deadly, yet he's misled the American people and mismanaged the response to this crisis. In the House, I joined with our colleagues to help preserve jobs through the Paycheck Protection Program. I worked to help families through emergency stimulus monies, and I've worked to help first responders, nurses, fire, police, EMTs. I've led efforts for testing and research. And our district's been disproportionately affected by this. I did lead a coalition to be more flexible so that it takes into account the seasonal industries that are involved, the hospitality industries, the restaurants. I worked to get the monies more to community banks so that funding's available. And I've worked with our hospitals to provide funding for them and PPE for our nurses. At the same time, in the Supreme Court, we're on the verge of losing our health care rights as the Affordable Care Act is facing a repeal. That's taking away our protections for pre-existing conditions, for coverage for children that are under 26, making sure women don't get discriminated against just because they're women, and making sure there's protection for those suffering from the opioid addiction crisis. I know that I'll continue to bring my knowledge, skill, experience to this in the present, and I want to continue given the opportunity to do this, to meet this crisis in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Bill Keating giving his opening statement. Now we're going to go to Helen Brady.
Hi. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. My name is Helen Brady. I'm a mother of four, married to my husband for 32 years. No, wait a minute. I've been with him longer than that. We met at UMass Amherst, and I'm a working mom. I speak my mind, and I'm running to be an independent voice for change in the 9th Congressional District. I'm running to end the 44-year political career of Bill Keating. He has held office since I was in 7th grade. For 32 years, I've worked in the private sector in budgeting, finance, business development, and tourism expansion, skills that this district can use at these times especially. Over the past few months, I've learned a lot about our congressman. For one, he doesn't care about the rights of voters. I witnessed this firsthand when he and his buddies on Beacon Hill tried to kick me off the ballot. Talk about collusion and voter suppression. He does not support the police in his own district. He is a co-sponsor of radical legislation that removes the safety net that allows our police to do their jobs. It's called qualified immunity. You may want to look that one up. Whether it's COVID, the climate, health care, everything is an existential threat to Bill and the Democrats. And for some reason, they think they're going to save us all from ourselves. So please hand over your liberties and ask questions later. The good news is I'm a compassionate conservative that shares the values of this district. I grew up in this district, and like you, I want our streets safe, our jobs back, our kids in school, and not living under a cloud of constant fear. I want the economy back on track and growing as it had been before the government seized our small businesses and our liberties. And like you, I want clean water and air. I want the old nuclear power plant and Superfund sites cleaned up. I will work with whoever becomes president. Sadly, Bill Keating's values come in the form of a scripted speech out of Washington, a congressional body with a less than 20% approval rating. In the Brady family, that is a failing grade, and that is why I have chosen to run, or one of the many reasons I have chosen to run, and I thank you again for having me here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement with Helen Brady. Now we're going to go to Kevin Tachi, host of Monday Night Talk. Your question for our candidates and who's going first.
Thank you, Christine. Law enforcement reform is the modern day hot button topic. I ask all three of you, candidates and incumbent alike, does there need to be a federal mandate when it comes to policing, whether it's certification? When I say certification, I think of like the CDL licenses or reallocating department funding for social services. Please share your thoughts, and we'll start with Coach.
Well, I think that there should be teachers' colleges and criminal justice in the same college. I think they should be trained that way. And so when they go on the street, they have a little bit of knowledge about social work and other things. I think they should have funding only through the cooperation with the police. I don't think politicians should be involved without having the police department and other people involved. It's an issue today. I know many, many police officers. 98.5% of the police officers in the United States are good people. They're our neighbors. They're our friends. But they've been taking a beating lately. I had 9 students of mine that I coached. They all became police officers. I think that they should have the better training and start it in the colleges. Framingham has a good program.
Is this something, though, that the federal government should have a hand in, or should just something that be the states take care of, in your opinion?
I think the states should take care of it because I've been in 49 states, and I'll tell you, they're very different. Massachusetts is a lot different from Wyoming and a lot different from Idaho. So I would do it state, not federal.
Right. Same question to you, Congressman, in regards to policing and certification on the federal level.
Well, I think there's certain things that should be done federally. I think that certainly in light of the events of today that chokeholds and no-knock warrants, for example, are two things that federally could be addressed. I understand that the criminal justice system is more state and local in our history. I know it because I was a DA. I know it because I was Senate Chair of Public Safety. I know these issues well. But that doesn't mean they can't be addressed effectively at the regional level, too. As DA, I really proposed many reforms. One of them, civil rights training for police officers, which they embraced, drug courts, alternatives to prosecution, and setting up a mental health diversion program so that people with mental health issues don't have the criminal justice system as a safety net.
Okay. Helen, same question.
Well, the congressman set up all of these different procedures and reforms, it sounds like, when he was a DA, which is why I would wonder his reasoning for supporting H.R. 7120. One of the first people that volunteered to work on my campaign is a retired police officer from Weymouth, and he tried, I guess he sent an email to Bill Keating, and he never heard from him. This timing is horrible because the police officers now, because of the COVID and the incidences of drug abuse are higher and drinking and all sorts of calamities happening because of this. The timing's horrible. Do we need reform? Every single industry that I know of always needs reforms. But to do it at this time is a slap in the face. And to say, well, you know, to say that your family or law enforcement and whatnot, you know what, if they get into trouble, qualified immunity is gone. But you're from a privileged class, so your family will be fine, but the regular police officers won't.
So I would ask you, though, again, should it be something that is addressed at the federal level when it comes to certification?
No, absolutely not. All politics is local. This state's very different from Alabama. This state's different from Texas. There are different gun laws. In this state, everything should be local. We're different people from the South or wherever, California even.
Okay. Charles Mathewson's questions for the candidates.
On a related topic, Black Lives Matter as an organization has come under fire. It is now considered the largest worldwide political movement. Bill, what do you think about Black Lives Matter as a movement?
Black Lives Matter. You can't deny the systemic racism that exists in our country. It's just not in the criminal justice system. It is across the board. It's in our economic system. It's in our educational system. It's in our healthcare system. You know that chances of a minority child going to the hospital with COVID-19 is 8 times that of a white child. So we know this as a fact. And I know with my colleague and friend John Lewis what it's like to have lived through that. He shared the experiences of his lifetime to me, but he also gave me something else. He gave me lessons, as he gave so many others, in the value of nonviolence, of never losing hope, but never giving up. John Lewis, we miss him today.
Mike, same question to you. What about Black Lives Matter?
Black Lives Matter? I don't think they have the interest of the black citizens in the inner city. They're a political group. that wants to do away with religion, do away with the family structure. I was a teacher in New York City. 17,500 of my students were black and Hispanic. We lived through a period of 2,395 murders. We lived through poverty. Everybody was on a free lunch. I walked in the streets with those kids every day. I talked to them. They told me they came to school. I said, why didn't you come to school? While I was sleeping, a rat bit me. I don't think Black Lives Matter is worried about them. If you're going to defund the police like they want, what about that individual student that I had coming to school? The parents were petrified coming to school, not in school, but coming to school.
Helen, same question. What do you think about Black Lives Matter?
I have to look at the education. I think everything starts, of course, with family. I agree with you, Coach, that the family unit is the strongest and most successful path for any kid. I started having kids when I was in my early 30s, and I'm an educated white woman, and I was overwhelmed. So I can't imagine being in poverty with a child and then being stuck sending them to a school that's failing. And again, the Democratic Party does not want school choice. And the first thing we can do for a kid that's born in poverty is give them the absolute best chances for an education. And you can't tell parents they can't send their kid to a better school. That's just not fair, especially in Boston. Look at it. Boston is, we got Tufts, MIT, Harvard, all these unbelievable schools with huge endowments. And right up the street, they have failing schools in Boston. Do Black Lives Matter to them? Why don't you ask them that question?
Okay, thank you.
This is from one of our listeners sent in this question. This was Joe from Marshfield, and it is for Rep. Keating, as chairman of the subcommittee for Eurasian Affairs of the House Foreign Relations Committee, would you support the investigation of the Biden family activities, including transfers of money to them from Russian and Ukrainian sources?
Well, I'll tell you, it's already been investigated. It's been investigated over and over and over again. It's investigated by our own intelligence, by Mueller report. There's nothing there. There is nothing there. The president is now threatening to fire his FBI director, fire his CIA director, fire, maybe threaten to fire even his own attorney general, because they're not moving on this. They're not moving on it because there's nothing there. It's an obvious distraction for the failed activities of the president when you don't have enough that you can point to that you're doing yourself in the midst of a crisis like the one we're in now. You resort to distraction. This one's pretty poor.
Okay. And let's same question for you, Helen Brady. What do you think? Do you think that they should investigate the Biden family activities, including transfers of money to them from Russian and Ukrainian sources?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, you have these people that are in office forever, and they cover each other's tracks. And Mr. Keating's talking about investigating. There's nothing there to see. And all you talked about was Roger Stone still in February in 2020. In 2020, I came down with COVID. I'm here running for office. So what you're saying is basically what you did to Trump. So in the midst of a crisis. So, of course, everybody should be investigated. It's the United States of America, or a country of law and order. So, yes.
Okay. What about you, Coach Manley? What do you think? The Biden family activities, including transfer of money to them from Russian and Ukrainian sources, should that be investigated?
The first thing I would do is fire every professor for journalism, because we do not have a fair journalistic press. We don't have a media that's fair. If they were fair, they would investigate this as much as they do the president's taxes. That's what I'm saying. I believe there should be an investigation. I don't think it's a smokescreen. Where there's smoke, there might be fire. And I don't know, you go, it doesn't make sense to me. I come to Marshfield, I don't leave Marshfield with $83,000. If he goes to China or he goes to Ukraine and all of a sudden he has an $83,000 job a month without any qualifications, that just brings up some big questions for me.
You're listening to a WATD Political Forum. The race is for the 9th Congressional District. We have the incumbent, Bill Keating. We've got the Republican, Helen Brady, and independent candidate, Mike Manley. Let's go to our next question now. Kevin Tachi.
If it isn't rolled back by the Supreme Court, I want to know what you feel realistically needs to be done with what remains of the Affordable Care Act. Does it need to be modified or completely overhauled by whoever is elected in November and takes office or remains in office come January? We'll start with the congressman.
Well, as I mentioned, our rights are being threatened, our health care rights. All those protections are really right in the Supreme Court's line of fire to eliminate the Affordable Care Act. We have to preserve those rights. Now, in terms of modification, one thing that I think would be a benefit is give another public option. That option would be Medicare coverage for those older than 50. So they have their own choice whether they want to opt in to that or not. So I truly am concerned about the loss of all these health care rights, including pre-existing condition coverage. But if it's not repealed, which I hope it isn't, I think we can make a change. That's one major change we can make in the system to provide more choices for individuals.
Coach had made mention about Medicare for all. What are your thoughts in regards to him saying that older folks like us could end up standing at the back of the line waiting for procedures, whether it's a hip or a knee replacement? What are your concerns in regards to that if there is a Medicaid for all and those who do need the services?
Is that one also for me or for everyone?
No, I'm asking you that, Congressman. It was something that was brought up by one of your opponents, and I want to get your thoughts in regards to if there was Medicare for all and the possibility that folks who do need will have to wait at the back of the line if everybody's getting free health care.
Well, I don't think people that are on Medicare feel that, and I don't think they'll feel that in the future. People know and trust the Medicare system. So it's really that's a false choice under the existing circumstances. So I'm more worried right now with what's happening today and the loss of coverage today. Over 20 million people will immediately lose their health care coverage in the middle of a pandemic if the Supreme Court acts the way they haven't been able to act in the 10 years I've been in Congress. Every year that I came in, they tried over 70 votes to repeal unsuccessfully the ACA. And they've said each time, we have a replacement. The president said he has a beautiful replacement, a perfect replacement. He still doesn't have it. He doesn't have it as we speak tonight.
Helen, same question. Give me your thoughts in regards to what needs to be done with the Affordable Care Act, whether it needs to be modified or completely retooled.
I think everybody should have health care in the country. This is a first world nation, and for us to still, after how many years, still fighting over health care. I did like Romney and Kennedy's plan when I was younger, and I felt that it should stay in the state. I thought that was worth keeping for my family and whatnot. But, you know, of course we have to cover pre-existing. Of course we have to be competitive in transparency, and the quality has to be there. If you work your whole life and you have health insurance that you've paid for, there's no reason why you should be going to the back of the line, especially if you're – I mean, I worked with musicians. They're playing violins like this. Their neck's going to hurt. They need – in my opinion, they worked hard for their money, and – they shouldn't have to wait and be in some universal health care. So we need to figure this one out. We need to get more blood in there. People aren't going to fight with one another because it's all along party lines, and that's the problem in this country right now. Everything is, you know, blue or red.
Same question, Coach.
I govern with my heart. Everybody should have health care, the poorest person. I would keep the $165 million people that have health care. But there's one question that nobody ever asks and nobody gives me the answer. If the Affordable Care Act is so good, why did 21 presidential candidates raise their hand and say they were for Medicare for all? I think if it's going to be knocked down in the Supreme Court, we should go line by line and build it up. But remember, those 21 candidates said, we are for Medicare for all. I never got an answer for that.
Charles Mathewson, questions for the candidates?
Bill, who do you listen to when making a decision in D.C.?
I hope I listen to my conscience, and it's based on cumulatively knowing the district, knowing people in the district, listening to people in the district. You know, with the COVID-19 crisis, the thing that Tevis, my wife, and myself miss the most, we actually enjoy going around talking, listening to people, not just in political events, but social events, civic events. And I view that as one of the most important means of knowing, you know, how I should vote on an issue. Knowing your own district, which has different needs than other parts, might face things and challenges more disproportionately. Understanding those things, and they're all coming to bear in this terrible crisis, is important. So I really factor in that experience I have listening to people. And I think it's important for each of us to be able to do that. That's why I spend as much time going around the district as I do.
Helen, what rogue radical entities that you mentioned on your website do you think Bill cows to?
Antifa? I mean, you know, you signing that police bill is kind of, you know, giving them a nod. That's how I felt, and that's how the police officers, who I walked all around different towns and cities speaking with police officers, and they felt that the criminals were getting more respect than the police officers, and that's what I'm talking about right there. And again, this is from police officers. I have friends that are, that work in the law, and I've spoken to them. They are behind me. They support me because that's exactly what you just asked me. They're concerned. They're concerned that they're the ones who are becoming, the villains. And it's not. It's just not a good narrative for them right now because they're dealing with a lot of a mental health crisis. And to have this concern for them and their families is outrageous.
Mike, you're a relative newcomer to the district. Who would you listen to?
I would listen to the people of the district. I'm not a mean-spirited person, but Congressman Keating, when I was out there getting my signatures, everybody kept asking me, who's our congressman? And, you say you're going out there in the district. I've been in all the towns handing out my cards, giving my 2020 handshake. I talked to those people in Globe Village in Fall River, the farthest part of this district. They need help up there. And I would, you're always busy, but you got to make time. Time is important. Your family, it's everything. But your district that you represent, you have to give the time. You have to give the passion. You got to have the enthusiasm.
Okay, as a follow-up, Bill, what is your position to Antifa and to what Mike said about you not being in the district?
Well, Antifa's not a rogue or violent group. That's not my opinion alone. It's the opinion of our chief law enforcement official, the director of the FBI. That's Donald Trump's appointed chief law enforcement official of the United States of America, Christopher Wray. And he said the greatest threat just recently, the greatest threat from those type of extremist organization, violent groups, are white supremacists and hate groups. Don't take my word from it. Take Donald Trump's chief law enforcement official. In terms of being around the district, take it from a third-party source. Just recently, the Boston Globe and Channel 5 did a survey, an investigation of all the House members in Massachusetts in Congress. And they determined among all of them, I was number one in time spent in the district. So that's not me saying that. That's after an investigation by the Globe and Channel 5.
All right, Mike, we're just going to take a quick break here. You're listening to a WATD Political Forum, 9th Congressional District. We're going to check in with Stuart Painting and be back in about a minute. Thank you.
It seems like political season never ends, just like taking care of your home. Hi, I'm Sheldon Stewart of Stewart Painting in Hingham. Taking the first step in voting can be very similar to taking the first step in painting and repairing your home. Neither should wait. Take pride in your vote and your home. Visit our website at stewartpaint.com to learn more about our services, or stop by our Hingham office at 15 Levitt Street. Stewart Painting. Expect the best.
WATD's political forum continues. Now, back to Studio B. Here's your moderator, Christine James.
Here in the 9th Congressional District, we've got the incumbent Democrat, Bill Keating. We've got Republican challenger, Helen Brady, and independent candidate, Mike Manley, asking questions here tonight. Going to start with stimulus money. What needs to happen with stimulus money in Washington to get the money that we're looking for here in Massachusetts, Helen Brady?
Well, I looked through it. I'm not an expert on any of these bills by any means. I'm a working mom. But looking at it, I would like to see money going to as many small businesses as possible. I have friends who own restaurants, particularly, and they're losing their businesses left and right. I don't understand why we would have pensions in there. So that brings to light the question of why are there funds for pensions? What does that have to do with this? This is about us. This is about our people who work. I've worked 32 years at the Symphony. There are no concerts. I do not have a job. The first time in 32 years. The people who need the money are the people who have businesses. They provide services. I worked in the tourism industry for a really long time, and a lot of those people that own those bus companies are mom and pops. And they did not get a bailout. And tourism is crucial to this district. We have to find a way to get back the money to the mom and pop.
Okay. Quick 30 seconds. If you were in this position in Washington, what would you do to make it happen? What needs to happen?
Well, if you're talking about $1.8 trillion is the last number, it's been going back and forth, you have to get the money out there. People need it. And I would sign on, of course. I don't know what the holdup is. Again, it's partisan fighting. And who gets hurt? The middle class people. Because the Republicans and the Democrats, the lifelongs, they've been there too long and they can't get along. So okay, we need new people.
Same question, Mike Manley. What needs to happen with the stimulus money in Washington?
I'm going to tell you a little story. A well-dressed businessman came into the barber shop, and right behind him was a 10-year-old boy. The barber gave the man a haircut. The man told the barber he'll be right back. The kid pops up on the chair, and the barber is cutting his hair. And what happens? He tells the kid, "When is your father coming back to pick you up?" And the kid said, "That's not my father. He just came up to me and said, 'Kid, how would you like to get a free haircut?'" Now, what does that story mean to me? The well-dressed man was the big business, the Washington bureaucrats down there. The kid was everybody, the kids that they want everything for free, and the barber, working in his barber shop for 10 hours a day, a family man, a businessman, paying his taxes, doing what he's supposed to. He got the shaft.
Okay, but very quickly, in 30 seconds, like I asked Helen Brady, what needs to happen in Washington right now?
Line by line for the stimulus. Line one thing for small businesses, the other for the states, the other for the hospitals. You don't lump it together because that's what causes problems. Line by line, stimulus. They're so close now, but they're still fighting about it.
Okay. And Congressman Keating, what needs to happen in Washington with the stimulus money?
Well, I know this is radio, Christine, but I must tell you, with those that know me or might be looking on local TV, when it comes to haircuts, probably I'm the least qualified. I'm a little follically challenged compared to my opponents. I'm a little bald, but I may not know enough about haircuts, but I know what to do and what we've been doing to address this problem. It hasn't been done by the administration, but it's been done by the House. We've worked with the CARES Act 1 and 2, the Family First emergency funding that's there. And what we're doing going forward, we've waited 5 months for action on the HEROES Act. I'm sorry, I got a red card in front of me, so I'll have an opportunity to do that in greater depth as we go forth.
Well, you know what? Let me give you another 30 seconds like I gave the other two. In a nutshell, in 30 seconds, what needs to happen right now in Washington with stimulus money?
We need action on the House bill that's there that provides state and local funding. They're hemorrhaging at the state and local level. We need stimulus checks for individuals, unemployment help. And we also have to deal with the virus itself. We can't just throw money at the symptoms. If we're not attacking the virus, which our bill does with testing, research, and tracing, we're never going to be able to get out of the economic tragedy, the devastating effects we're dealing with there, too. So ours is balanced. It deals with the cause, and it's there, ready for action. We've compromised several times on it to get the dollar amount equal.
Thank you. Kevin Tanchi, questions for the candidates.
It's interesting that Helen mentioned about tourism. I'm going to actually mention commercial fishing. This is an industry that has suffered for years, whether it's regulations or stringent fishing limits, now a pandemic. Share your knowledge about the industry and what you're willing to do to offer any economic assistance to the fishermen. Unless you're like the congressman, then you can talk any work that you've done in their favor. We'll start, though, with Helen. What's your knowledge of the fishing industry and where it's at today during COVID-19?
Again, I don't have a huge knowledge of it. I've been working 32 years in the tourism industry, but when I go down to New Bedford and I see the development down there and the opportunities to expand that tourism site, the potential's huge down there. And a lot of people I've spoken to regarding economic development, they don't realize these assets that they have. They're trying to reinvent the wheel, and we need to put this or that. And it's like, you have history. History is free. It's free advertising. It's in all the history books. And to try to supplement what the fishing industry already does for the community in finding educational ways, ecotourism. I know that the wind farms is a big issue, and they're still trying to iron out that and how that will affect the bottom line for all those fishermen. Again, that's an area that I think we're all learning about and trying to understand. But there's so much around there to develop economically from a tourism aspect that would be a supplemental way to bring in more money and visitors, and hopefully a train comes in there someday.
Congressman, if you will, talk about the commercial fishing industry.
Well, it was already meeting several challenges, but the COVID-19 virus has made it worse. Twice, I've led the charge to get emergency funding for the fishing industry, and we're successful with hundreds of millions of dollars, yet that's not enough with what they're facing, even though they're still qualified under the PPP program to be helped as well. But we've also led the charge to have the government purchase stock and fish right now and use it to distribute for people that are facing food security issues during this crisis. We also have funding for commercial marketing because there's a lot of fish that's there. We could do more to market the fish that's there and help the industry that way. That's just a few of the things. I've also favored video monitoring so they don't have the in-person monitors and the expense of that as they go out and do their job. And that's been done during this crisis. That should continue going forward as well. So these are just a few of the many things that I've been working on and will continue to work on.
Coach, your knowledge of the commercial fishing industry and what needs to be done to help them?
My first coaching job was in Provincetown. My assistant coach was a fisherman. So I got a firsthand knowledge. He said, Mike, he used to take me down to the pier. He said there used to be 30, 40, 50 fishing boats coming in and out all the time. Now we're down to 4. There are regulations. What they were doing was buying up another person's license because they were limited to going out a few days a year. How can you live by going out a few days a year? That's it. You know, we have to help the fishermen. I got a nice soft spot in my heart for fishermen. They work hard, but they need help. And the regulations, they were putting someone on the boat counting the fish for their, and they had to pay for it. Finally, like the congressman said, they're going to do the monitoring. But that was hurting everybody.
Charles Matheson, questions?
Mike, in your opening statement, you decried democratic society. What's the alternative to a democratic society?
Capitalism.
Don't we have a democratic capitalist society now?
Part, but the entrepreneurs will be squelched. Whatever, you know, the people that run the businesses, small businesses, the entrepreneurs, they work 15, 16 hours a day. If you invent something, you're going to have to give it to the government in a democratic society. We have, all right, Medicare is part of it. Fine. But the entrepreneurship is going to be crushed. People are going to be living in housing that's 12 stories high, just like East Germany. And now you may say I'm crazy, but I'm going down the road. Planning boards here are going to be hurt because they want to put on the central government. So they'll have the rule, the Cory Booker rule. I know Cory Booker from living next town from him. So look it up.
Helen, the Republican Party has taken a beating lately with some people rejecting the new party, wishing for the old GOP. If you go to D.C., how would you deal with the division?
I'm used to dealing with division. I'm from a big family. And I talk to people. I ask them questions. And I listen. And I'm not 100% for one thing. You know, Bill Keating votes 98% or something crazy like that with Pelosi. I'll never vote with anyone. I'll never agree with anyone. Again, I've been married a long time. You can ask them. 98% has never happened in my life anywhere. I try to be open and listen to both sides. I can be persuaded of something that's totally different. So I'm open to that, and I'm beholden to no one. I don't care who's president. I said that in my opening speech. I don't care. We need Americans that have worked and understand what has to be done to get things done. You get along with people. I didn't work at the 32 years at the BSO because I was an unfriendly person. I worked in tourism, hospitality. I know how to get along with people, and I know how to collaborate with people, and that's what I bring to this.
Bill, you're in the middle of it, how do you try to overcome division, and do you have a 98% voting record with the party?
The civil nature of this job is important. I've had Republican members to my house. We go out, we socialize. So there's a huge misunderstanding that we don't get along civilly. What you see on the floor, on both sides, no matter who's in power, when you vote on the floor on a bill, there's built-in division already. For instance, we've passed in the House over 600 bills this year, just for an example. Now, 400 of them languish in the Senate, about 150 have been signed into law. And over 80% of them are bipartisan bills, but we don't vote on them because there's agreement. So we merely suspend the rules and go forth. People don't understand that aspect of the bill. So there already is great agreement. In the last Congress, we kept the examples. I think I finished third in the minority party when I was there in getting my amendments accepted by the Republicans. So I have a track record of working together and actually being effective doing it.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Social Security. What needs to change? What needs to stay the same? Coach Manley.
Well, most people out there don't realize that we do pay money every month from our Social Security for our health care. A lot of people out there that don't know about the system thinks that we get it for free. But then we have to put a supplemental. What they've been doing all those years, they've been taking the money out of Social Security and using it for something else. Remember when Al Gore was laughed at when he said, put the money in a lockbox? The other thing is robotics. Any corporation that has a robot that takes away five jobs from somebody, they would have to pay into Social Security $20,000 each, because everybody that loses a job is not putting into Social Security.
Helen Brady, what about Social Security? What needs to change? What can stay the same?
Well, Social Security was started in 1935, and I believe by FDR, and it was, I think, for every three workers, one retiree, and that number has completely switched, that it's like 6-to-1 now. So, and the average age was 64. I could be a year or two off there. But now, and that was based on how long you lived. And now, of course, people's lives are projected to be 78 is the average age. And so we have to adjust that. And we may, and it's not going to be popular, but you may have to do a means tested equation in there because it's math. It's basic math. There's nothing complicated about it. So who wants to work late? I don't, but it might have to be the way it goes. So it really has, it's a math equation, and whether people want to accept that it might have to be means tested or not could happen. So we need to bring it up and talk about it. Yeah.
Congressman Keating, what about the Social Security? What needs to change? What's okay right now?
What certainly doesn't have to change is raising the age on Social Security benefits that people have had a promise to secure and paid into over the years. It's their money. A means test is something that I think goes against it being an insurance policy, generally speaking. We don't need Donald Trump raiding it to fund his payroll tax the way he's doing it right now. He's raiding both the Medicare and Social Security fund. What we do need is a bill I'm an original co-sponsor on, Social Security 2100, which will take it into the next century, make it solvent, make sure that for a cup of price of a cup of coffee a month, that it is solvent going forward, that there's cost of living built into it, and things that are make great common sense, like changing the ceiling so that people, if they want to work at a certain age voluntarily, take a part-time job, they're not limited to $25,000 and before they start paying taxes on it. So we can win all the way around with Social Security 2100. I'm an original sponsor. It should be voted on and go through.
Okay. Kevin Tachi, questions for the candidates?
Prior to COVID-19 and the call for police reform, immigration was one of the key issues that a lot of folks were divided over. I want to hear from each of you as to what is the right direction to go. Is the current efforts to erect a wall along the country's southern border and deporting millions of illegal aliens the right way to go? Or coming together to have a comprehensive immigration reform bill with a pathway for full and equal citizenship? We'll start with you, Coach. What's the right way?
If I had a dollar for every time I heard comprehensive immigration reform, I'd be pretty wealthy. My thing is, we can't deport everybody. I'm for the DACA kids. DACA kids right now are about 26 years old. And I always said, and I'll say it again, that if a kid is in school, elementary school, middle school, and high school, he doesn't get in any trouble. Came into this country, wasn't with his parents, should get citizenship at graduation. They should have two ceremonies. One for citizenship for those kids. There might not be too many up here, but I know the inner city there might be, especially in New York. And graduation. That is what I think it at.
Additional 30 seconds. Do you feel that undocumented or illegal aliens should get a privilege of a driver's license?
That, honestly, I can't give you an answer because I do the good and bad. I know that's not the right thing for a politician to do, but I have to really think about it. The insurance rates would be – it's just one of those things that I do not have enough information about.
Congressman, your thoughts on what we should do in regards to immigration or immigration reform?
Well, I'll tell you, if there's some changes, particularly in the Senate, I think there's great opportunity to deal with this issue once and for all. McCain and Kennedy came forth with a bill. It had strong bipartisan support, over 80%, I think, in the Senate. It came over the House and nothing's happened in years because it was used as a political wedge. I even had one of my colleagues that I'm friendly with on the other side admit to me he's against it because he thinks the new people will be pathways to citizenship. They'll vote Democratic. That's a ridiculous thought. But actually, a colleague has told me that in person. Look at DACA, the Dreamers. There's overwhelming support for that. If a child was born here, knows no other country, he should be having a path to citizenship. That's the least controversial issue. I also think with 11 million people here undocumented, we're not going to deport 11 million people. There should be a pathway to citizenship for those people. They shouldn't cut in line above the others. So we have the ability to do this, put politics aside. There's great support for this on both sides of the aisle.
Additional 30 seconds. Would you support, have you ever spoken on whether undocumented or illegal aliens should have a driver's license?
Well, that's usually handled at the state level. I have talked to police chiefs while I was in state government. The thought that it was better to do that. Coach Manley brought up a good point about insurance. You want to make sure people have mandatory coverage in case that driver hurts you. But the police chiefs, I've talked to several that think, when I represented a legislative district in the statewide, that thought it was a good idea.
Helen, same question in regards to immigration. What do you stand on immigration?
Well, we shouldn't be having this conversation. It's 2020, and amnesty was given during Reagan's last term in office, I believe. So this, again, has been used by career politicians for too long. They kicked it down the road. They didn't deal with it. People are getting hurt. People are afraid. That's not the country that we should be living in. Nobody coming here should feel that way. And I believe that the DACA kids should should be here, given citizenship. And I think if you're already here, we can't send those people back unless you have a criminal record. And if you want a driver's license, again, that's a state. That should be a state issue that they decide upon. Roads are different. You know the traffic's different here. When it's up and running, it's, you know, you're going to know how to drive and you know how to get around that city. So I would never send anybody away. I'm not like that. I'm a compassionate conservative. And I think this should have been dealt with a long time ago. And shame on us for not.
Okay. I'm going to go to our lightning round now. Remember, these are the questions we ask where the answer is either yes or no. And that's yes or no without a long explanation or one or two sentences tops. So I'm going to start here really quickly. The bridge replacement over to the Cape. Does this worry you? Two sentences. Helen.
Yes.
Okay. Coach Manley.
Put a 45-foot elevated all the way up so you can have tourists looking all over the Cape.
Okay.
Just like the Penobscot Bridge.
Okay. Bill Keating, two sentences.
Army Corps said it has to be replaced. Repairing it's not an option anymore. I worked with the Army Corps. I worked with the state. I've put into place the funding apparatus.
Two sentences. To do that. Just two. Okay. Let's go to Kevin Tachi. Quick lightning round, then we're going to go to final statements.
Are you for term limits? Yes or no?
100%.
Helen Brady, Bill Keating, yes or no?
No.
Coach Manley?
I'm 72. I'm only going to take 10 term limits.
Okay.
10 years.
Charles Mathewson, lightning round questions.
What's your favorite bad habit? It has to be your habit. It has to be a bad habit. And it can't be that you try to be too good.
Okay.
Helen? Favorite bad habit?
Come on, no Eddie Haskell
answers.
I don't
have a favorite bad habit. I got a few. I don't know. Favorite bad habit? I don't know.
Okay. Coach Manley, favorite bad habit?
Bad habit for me that drives my wife crazy is when I play my music loud in the car.
Okay.
I blast it.
Okay, we got a rocker here. Okay, Bill Keating, favorite bad habit?
I've developed one in Congress. I think we had a frenetic pace. 15-minute meetings. It's coffee. In the morning, I'm having one coffee after another. And during this, it's weaned itself a little bit away from me.
All right, there we go. See, like I said, nobody can keep it short here.
Too much.
Okay. That will never happen with me. All right, now let's go to our closing statements. We're going to reverse the order, and we're going to begin with Helen and then Brady, then go to Bill Keating, and then Mike Manley. 1 minute, please.
1 minute. Oh, my gosh. Okay, thank you. Thank you again for having me here, and I just want to give a shout-out to the SJC for giving the voters in the 9th Congressional District district of choice, especially during these tumultuous and trying times. First and foremost, I'm running for my kids. I have three daughters and a son who deserve a better future than the one this congressman is painting and dangerously advocating for. I was once an active member of the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party of today is not the same as the JFK Party of my parents, or myself, or actually a lot of my friends. In fact, the Democratic Party of Bill Keating has been taken over by people who share the same political ideology as those my father and his generation fought against. Their ideals and values are the existential threat to the America that I want my children to be in. My term in office will not be about political parties, but rather the values of the district. I will encourage public debate and not cancel out a person or an idea because my party or leadership tells me to do so. I will work hard, as I've always done in the private sector, and we need regular working people. That's me. I'm beholden to no one. My name is Helen Brady. Give him Helen on or before November 3rd. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was Helen Brady with her closing statement. Now let's go to Congressman Bill Keating.
A lot of the values imparted on me were imparted by my grandmother. She was a Gold Star mother, an immigrant that came to this country, a very bright woman, and I take that to heart. You know, we're facing existential issues, and in this debate, you can get a flavor for the differences as well as the ones we've had. Different views of climate change, different views how to deal with health care, access and affordability, different ideas how to deal with the pandemic and wearing masks. You know, we haven't touched on the local aspect. All politics is local, and whether it's supporting the dredging of Plymouth Harbor, $14 million, working in Green Harbor dredging, maybe getting a permanent solution with a jetty move, flood insurance, dealing with the opioid issue and the $1.2 million grant that we just got to try and reduce that in our region, working with the cranberry industry, the fishing industry, and the hospitality industry. We have targeted money in relief for the restaurants and hospitality in the HEROES Act. I hope I can work to get that through. Thank you. Please vote. Have a plan. Please consider Bill Keating. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was Bill Keating. Now we're going to go to the closing statement. Mike Manley.
Thank you for having me. I just want to let everybody know that I am also pro-life, and I want you to make good choices today so you don't have any regrets tomorrow. I have an attitude of gratitude for America. The United States is the greatest country in the world. There are 96,400 seconds today. Did you thank God that you live in the United States? Did you thank somebody that helped you? Did you send them a thank you note? These are things that are important to me. Little things. Little things in life are important, not the big picture. I will govern with my heart, and if you know me, they know that's true. I want to talk to all the people that are unenrolled. You left 23,000 ballots last year and blank. If you don't have a choice, vote for me. Mike Manley.
Thank you very much. That was Mike Manley. You've been listening to a political forum here on WATD in the 9th Congressional District. We've had the incumbent Bill Keating, Democrat, Republican Helen Brady, Independent Mike Manley, and we've been asking questions here along with Monday Night Talk host Kevin Tachi, Charles Mathewson from WATD, Amy Leonard's been doing our timing, and Larry Nelson Engineering. And thank you very much, Marshfield Community Television. We also have our intern there in security, Colin Cronin, over in the corner. I know. He's like a ninja. Be careful. Anyway, you're going to hear this entire forum is going to be up online, 959WATD.com, and you'll hear selected cuts on this during morning drive. We tell people, get out and vote on November 3rd. You can listen to WATD. We'll have complete election night coverage here starting at 7 o'clock. Remember, if you don't vote, you don't have a voice. I'm Christine James, WATD. Thank you for listening.